So here is Yahweh telling us, this in Kara. Yahweh was speaking in first person. This is Leviticus. It's Kara, the invitation. He's speaking in first person, and he's saying, when you come into the promised land, the produce of, the product of uncircumcision is inedible. Until you understand the 3 years of Yosha's human ministry. Until you understand what he said and what he did and what he prepared to accomplish and what he fulfilled regarding those important 3 days. Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. And until you understand that a good tree produces good fruit, you can be nourished by it, but if it's uncircumcision, it's poisonous to you. Don't eat it. And then Yosha explains it in the midst of his condemnation of Paul and Pauline Christianity in the Sermon on the Mount, going into great detail about the nature of trees and their fruit trees and their produce. And it's fruit trees. Same, they use the exact same words.
Yeah, that is so devastating to Christianity. It's amazing.
It's amazing. But it's I want to tell you something, Kirk. It's so devastating. Well, I don't want to be too hard on myself. I'm typically, I think, too hard on myself in terms of things I didn't notice. I remember translating the good and bad fruit thing, and you know, we did an hour on it not too long ago, within the last few weeks, trying to understand why Yosha went into such detail on the good and bad fruit. And what my conclusion was that he's not into compromise. That this you either accept the terms and conditions of his covenant the way he laid them out, you follow his Torah guidance, or forget it. You're not part of his family. You're not saved. It's his way or the highway, as it relates. And that's the conclusion I came to.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that's wrong, but it was a million miles from the complete answer. When James sent us this, now I know the complete answer. It's there because of this statement. Don't consume. Don't partake in the fruit of the bad tree, the uncircumcised fruit. Paul is the messenger of the uncircumcision. Don't eat it. Don't eat it. Don't consume it. Don't partake in it. That's what he's talking about here. It's this connection. And, you know, I should have made this connection. But, man, am I ever glad that Yahweh doesn't expect much from us other than we be open-minded and that we consider what he has to say and that we think about it, make the connections. And so, you know, rather than flogging myself for having missed it and done a show on it, now I want to celebrate the fact that we found it.
Well, this is
powerful. I mean, if you are an open-minded person who is into, really into, like you and I are, Yahweh's instructions, his guidance, then this is a really important statement. All right, so it goes on to say, this is now, if I may, and by the way, this is Kara, so this is in the Torah. Now, let's turn to the first prophetic statement, Yeshayah. Now, last time I checked, while Moshe was really important to Yahweh, so in direct contradiction to what Paul had just said, Yeshayah was too. So was Yirmiyah, and so was Ezekiel. These are the pillars of Yahweh's means, the most important implements of communicating his message. There's only one person between Kara, Yeshayah, Yirmiyah, and Ezekiel that is left out of this list that would be the pinnacle of Yahweh's most important messengers.
Tell me, Dode.
The Dode. He's the only one left out of this group, man.
I remember the first thing out of Dode's mouth when he saw Goliath or heard Goliath, he said, "Who is this uncircumcised jerk?"
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there we go.
So he
there we go. So yeah. It's just not there because we didn't have it on the list. Okay. So this is Yeshayah 52:1. Wake up. Wake up. Put on that energy and power. Oh, Zion. Zion. What does Zion mean?
signpost along the way.
Man, what a powerful term. Oh, man. I tell you what, to the greatest extent possible, you and I strive to be Zionists.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we're not saying that we are the sign. We're saying that we are showing people and proclaiming what's on those signs along the way. Nothing more important than being a Zionist.
I can at least read it.
Yeah, and I can read it, and I can read it aloud to you.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
And we can make the connections and talk about its importance. So, oh, Zion, put on your garments of brilliant splendor. Are you familiar with any brilliantly splendorous garments that the signposts along the way point us towards?
The set-apart spirit will cover you with splendor or
garment of light, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the garment of light that Yahweh is encouraging us to accept from the set-apart spirit. Oh, Jerusalem. Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was going to say, oh, Jerusalem and the set-apart city, haven't you?
Yeah, oh, Jerusalem and the set-apart city.
Set-apart.
So, was this O Vatican? No. Was this O Mecca? Was this O Washington, D.C.?
St. Paul's Cathedral in London? No.
O London. No. This is Yeshaya. This is Yeshaya 52. I mean, we're talking about now, you know, the last days. This is even in our future. And so in our future, is he talking about America and Washington? Is he talking about London, England, or Paris, France? Or, God forbid, that cesspool that is the Vatican in Rome? Most certainly not Mecca. He's talking about Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem. The set-apart city. So Jerusalem is Kodesh. You know anything else that's Kodesh?
Set-apart spirit.
Yep. The supplier of that garment of light. She is the Ruach Kodesh, isn't she? The set-apart spirit. Okay.
And we are Kodesh.
Right, as members of the covenant. Mm-hmm. Set apart unto Yahweh. The Torah is Kodesh.
Right.
Yahweh's name is Kodesh.
Everything,
the Shabbat is Kodesh.
Right.
The Mikra, the invitations to meet with God, they're
everything
Kodesh.
Related to him that's important is set apart.
Right.
Purpose.
Right. Oh, Jerusalem, the set apart city. For no more do the uncircumcised and the unclean come to you. All right. So where is Yahweh returning?
He's returning to the Mount, right back to the Mount of...
Mount of Olives, right?
Mount Olives, right. Where
what is the olive symbolic of?
Olive is the light. It was light, the set-apart spirit.
Right. Light, yes. It was the source of light. It was the source of nourishment, the source of healing, right?
Healing, right.
And so it's a representative. The olive is the representative of the set-apart spirit. Yahweh is returning to the Mount of Olives, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Where is the Mount of Olives? There's three primary mountains in this city. One of them is Zion, we've just mentioned. One of them is named after the set-apart spirit, the Mount of Olives. And what's the other one called?
Oh, that's... oh, God.
Yeah, I know. That happens to be Moriah.
Right.
Which means to revere Yahweh.
Yes.
But those are the three, right?
Yes.
In Jerusalem. So he just spoke of Zion. Now he's referencing Olives, and of course the other one is Mount Moriah, which is where the things happened over the 3 days. Okay, Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, fulfilled on Mount Moriah. And he says, "No more shall the uncircumcised and unclean come to you." In this set apart city. So what he is telling us here is that Jerusalem is the place that he is going to return.
Mm-hmm. Clean house.
Where did he say that the kingdom of Dod, which is the millennial kingdom, what city is it going to be established in?
Jerusalem.
Where is the new millennial temple going to be? Where is Yahweh going to construct that?
Mount Moriah, where it was to begin with.
In the heart of Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Right.
And where is the Yahweh going to reside? Yahweh, God himself, where is he going to reside during the millennial Shabbat?
This is his favorite town, right there.
He's going to be there in Jerusalem, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And so this says the uncircumcised never again going to enter that place. So that means the uncircumcised will be forever separated from, estranged from, kept away from Yahweh. So the message of uncircumcision is not just unclean, but it's wholly and completely unwelcome, forbidden. Wow. So here in Jerusalem, Paul is claiming to be the messenger of uncircumcision, which means he is the messenger of what Yahweh predicted in our immediate future. This is now, we're 18 years away from this.
Mm-hmm.
In 18 years from today, there won't be any of those who have ascribed to uncircumcision, which would be all Pauline Christians. Because it doesn't matter if you're circumcised or not, if you're accepting, if you're dining, if you're consuming the message of Paul, the message of uncircumcision, you are precluded.
Persona non grata.
Persona non grata. You are precluded from Jerusalem, which means you are precluded from the presence of Yahweh. Wow.
Well, I don't know how you missed that. I don't know how you can twist that around.
And you know what's amazing here is that, Kirk, I know I do not claim to be a scholar.
No.
I'm certainly not a theologian. You don't plan to be a scholar or a theologian either, do you?
No, I'm a two-bit artist in Alabama.
Well, I like your art.
Maybe 4 bits.
Okay, 4 bits. And JB, he's a technology expert, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He sent us these sightings. Three of us figured it out, didn't we?
Yeah.
What do you think the likelihood of someone that goes to Bible school that spends 4 years studying this stuff would be incapable of knowing that this is here, and that why didn't they make the connection where Paul said that he is the message of that he is the messenger of uncircumcision? Why didn't they make the connection to see that the message of uncircumcision is the forbidden fruit?
Yeah,
it is the fruit that is inedible. It's that which is inadequate. It's that which is makes you persona non grata with Yahweh, keeps you estranged from Him. Kirk, a moment ago you mentioned that we really do have our full assortment of the most important messengers on behalf of Yahweh, and they would be Moshe first and foremost. Dode would be the second most important, the author of the Psalms, the scribe, really, of the Psalms. But he processed so much of it. He was a net contributor. It's not just Yahweh's inspiration, although he was inspired for all of it. He was a net contributor, as was Moshe, because of Devarim. And then Yirmiyah, which is the Yahweh's prophet to the Gentiles, so that they would understand the consequence of, particularly of Christianity. It really denounces Christianity. And then Yeshayah, which was the most profound of all the prophets, predicting the last days, but predicting a whole swath of human history. And then Ezekiel, in terms of his witness to his people. And so you mentioned that Dode referred to Goliath as a uncircumcised Philistine, and so this is the statement that Yahweh or that Dode makes, it's found in the 17th chapter, I think. Yeah, this first Shamuel. Shamuel means he listens to God. In the 17th chapter, down around the 17th, 18th verses. Let me see if I can find a specific spot here. And Dode has been called out, and he talks about the murderous nature of this, and the The Philistine said, this day I will defy the host of Israel. Give me a man and let him fight. Let us fight each other. On hearing this, the Philistine's words, Shaul, who was the one that the children of Israel chose, that Yahweh warned against, as a warning against, you know, human governments are all rotten, and he gave us all the reasons that we should never choose to be political or choose a human government. And the Israelites were dismayed, and they were terrified. Then it talks about Dodo, and he was out tending sheep. And Dodo came forth, and then it has Dodo specifically saying, he comes out to defy Israel. The king will give him, so let's see, where does it begin? Okay. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done, what will be accomplished for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the host of the living God? Wow. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? The basis of Palestinian today, by the way, who would defy the host of the living God. So uncircumcised, defy the host of the living God. The host of the living God happens to be the not only the Malach, which are his envoys and messengers, but us as the children of his covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, who is this uncircumcised individual
that
would be in defiance of the living God? Now, I want you to think about this. Didn't Paul say that he was the messenger of the uncircumcision?
Yeah.
So, isn't he therefore an individual? If we're going to believe that Dodo, who we know was inspired by Yahweh, since we know for certain that Dodo was inspired by Yahweh, he just said, the uncircumcision is in defiance of Yahweh. Isn't that what Paul was from start to finish?
Absolutely. And it doesn't seem to matter how many times we say it, and I guess we're all going to say it till we leave this place. But it's so obvious that Shaul, Paul,
right,
is taking counter position to God. I mean, you cannot be on both sides of it.
Right.
You can't put your foot in both sides. I'm sorry, even if you understand this and are a Christian, you can't hold on to your baggage. You got to walk away just like Abraham. It's just that straightforward.
Let me give you another insight here. So who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the host of the living God? And, of course, he's speaking to the Philistine known as Goliath, who was uncircumcised. But who came up, who reinvented the term Philistine centuries after the last Philistine was gone?
The Muslims.
Oh, no.
The Arabs that came to
No. Hadrian.
Oh, that's right.
Hadrian came up. He was the messenger of the Philistines. He renamed the place Philistine.
Right.
Philistia. What was Paul? A Roman. My friend Kirk, it was stunning enough for Dodo to have said regarding this Philistine. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who would defy the host? And the host are, of course, the messengers of the living God. And what is it that we ask ourselves repeatedly? Who is this Paul, this Shaul, that would defy
God?
Yeah, the messengers of God. And then we made the connection just a moment ago. The last of the Philistines were killed by the Assyrians in about 500 or so BCE. But there was a Roman, Hadrian, who wanted to establish, rename Jerusalem after himself and establish a huge temple with himself as the chief deity in the temple there in Jerusalem. And he renamed Israel and the province of Yehuda, Philistina. who is this uncircumcised Philistine that would defy the host, the messengers of the living God? But let me just explain it. What did Paul claim to be?
He was the messenger from.
No, what did he claim to be? He claimed to be a Roman.
Oh, yeah. Both.
Who is that? Who is that Philistine? He's a Roman. By the way, who is the other player in this story? You know, I was talking about the guy that trembled in fear. What was his name? Bewildered. Befuddled. Terrified. Who was his name? That didn't know what to do with the Philistines, that trembled in fear of them, was not willing to challenge them and eradicate them. Who was that?
Shaul.
Oh, but son of a gun. That was Shaul.
And his name, too.
And what is the name of the guy that wrote this letter to the Galatians?
Shaul.
Wow. The connections are just amazing.
Well, that's a pretty easy one. I don't know why we missed it so long. I mean, we did the other day. Well, I mean, we did it before, but it's...
Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that would defy the messengers of the living God, the host of the living God? No, that was Paul. Who is he? You know, who is he to do that?
What's so interesting to me is Doe gets it right away. I mean, there's no hesitation. He doesn't have to build up to it like I do.
Oh, of course, no. Doe just walked
in. He knows exactly cut and dry. This is us. That's them.
Okay, let's be fair about this too, though.
Yeah.
Do you think this statement is so prophetic of Pauline Christianity and of Hadrian and Rome and all of this sort of thing? It's so prophetic of all that. Well, we can give Dode all the credit in the world for figuring out what Yahweh likes and how to engage and act upon his testimony and for writing beautiful lyrics to songs that empower us.
Okay.
He didn't. This did not come from his mind.
No.
He grasped it, and he grasped the moment. Okay. And because he knew Yahweh and had listened to him and loved him and loved his instruction he had the confidence, utter confidence that comes from being a member of the covenant. Okay. I am totally, there is nothing that bothers me or threatens me because I have the total confidence of the covenant. He had total confidence in Yahweh, which put him in this position. So we can credit him for that.
Yahweh gave him these words, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yahweh gave him these words. All right, so let's go to the next one. The next one comes from Jeremiah, and it's Jeremiah 6:10. Now, Jeremiah is, by the way, the one prophetic book where the audience, Jeremiah was a Israelite, but the audience is Goyim. 6:10. See? Which is Ain, see, their ear is uncircumcised, stubborn, unlearning, unhearing, unresponsive, and they are unable to listen. See, the word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They do not delight in it. All right, so if you are their ear is uncircumcised. So if you are listening to the message of uncircumcision, if you are listening to what Paul has to say, then what he's saying is that you are unable to hear God.
Yeah.
You are, the word of Yahweh is not just unknowable to you. You hate it.
Yeah.
The word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They despise the word of Yahweh. When you read Paul's letters, he despises the Torah.
Oh, more than a rabbi.
More than any rabbi.
More than, yeah.
Oh, despises the Torah. He calls the Torah dead. Pornography. He calls the Torah enslaving. He calls the Torah impotent. He hates the Torah.
He equates it with what happened on Mount Moriah.
Right.
I mean, uh, Horeb, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, he says that covenant Hagar, that was conveyed on Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai, I think is the term actually he uses, but the Torah that was conveyed, the covenant of Mount Sinai, which is the covenant of the Torah, the covenant of Mount Sinai was with Hagar. And therefore enslaved. No, it's an outright lie. The covenant with on that is memorialized on Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb, Hagar is expressly excluded,
yeah.
And the covenant is absolutely and unequivocally with Sarah and Abraham, and therefore with Yitzhak Laughter, and you know, that was happened to be the line, Kirk, that when. You know, I was trying to resolve the conflicts between Paul and Yahweh, and I remember I was doing my best to try to resolve these conflicts, and I came to this statement, and it was just, holy crap.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God, what do I do now? And I remember that I spent days and I read every Christian explanation of this statement that I could find, and they all agreed.
Mm-hmm.
That from Christianity's point of view, from Paul's point of view, the covenant that Yahweh made in the Torah was enslaving, and that it had to be replaced. And it was okay for Paul to lie in this way to make his point. Machiavellian.
Well, don't you think that the kid that goes off to become a theologian usually went to Bible school or something? I mean, mm-hmm. He's so indoctrinated by the time he goes that he'll buy whatever they're selling as long as he's Christian.
Yeah, but. This is beyond the fact that they are not capable of processing what Yahweh has to say, and they're not. They're not.
So indoctrinated at this point.
Right, right. If you were to take almost any pastor, any priest, and you share what Yahweh had to say and how what Yahweh's testimony is completely against their religion, particularly Christian religion, and you share that with them, they are not going to listen to you. They will find every manner of way. They can't debate you because you're quoting Yahweh.
Yeah.
So all they can do is besmirch you. They can refuse to listen to you.
Well, they can call you a kook.
Yeah, they can. That's what Jerry Falwell said. They would say if I quoted Yahweh. But this goes on to actually describe the response that Larry tells us he gets so often from those who are religious when they're confronted with Yahweh's testimony.
Yeah,
they despise it.
Yeah, despise and change the subject.
Yeah, Yahweh's testimony is a reproach to them. They are really uncomfortable with it. They dislike it. And you know, when you read Pauline Christianity, while he claimed to speak for the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, he hated him.
Mm-hmm.
Hated him in every possible way. And so, you know, here you are trying to deal with this, and you recognize that. Because of the nature of Paul and his audience,
so when I
they
draw,
hate it. They hate the Torah. They don't just not listen to it. They don't like it. They besmirch. Oh, that's the law. That's the thing that's Jews. Those are the Jewish holidays. They got nothing to do with me. No, where of the New Testament and of the Gospel of Grace will have nothing to do with that Jewish stuff. We're the church.
Yeah. Church, say to me.
Oh, yeah, we have nothing. We have nothing in common with those Jews or their Torah, their law. And that's what this is saying here, that they not only are unwilling to listen, they hate what God has to say. That's the message of uncircumcision, is to go from pretending to have a relationship with God and yet hating what he actually has to say.
Well, this is the world we live in right now, described right here.
Exactly. So, world as it has been for a very long time. It's the. Mm-hmm. It explains why, and, you know, this is broad strokes. Yirmiyahu is writing about the majority of people, and he says the majority of people don't listen to what Yahweh has to say. And those who have an uncircumcised ear not only don't listen to what Yahweh has to say, they find Yahweh's words repulsive. That's the message of uncircumcision. It's the message of Paul. It is the basis of Christianity. Now, all of this is here. There's none of this that was hidden. Now let's go to Ezekiel 28:10. Yahweh tells the prince of Sor that he will, and this is kind of putting it in perspective, the story here, the prince of Sor, that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. So in 28:10, Yahweh is saying that they're going to suffer the deaths of the uncircumcised. Deaths, plural. How many times can you die?
Well, you can die. Well, your body can die, and your soul can just go off.
Both
can die. Yeah.
Both can die. So there's two deaths, right? There's only two ways to die.
Yeah.
Your soul can die. Your body can die.
Mm-hmm.
Soul can die. Body can die. This is deaths, plural. Muth, plural.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about circumcision, uncircumcision. If you're of the message of uncircumcision, your body's going to die, and your soul's going to die. You know, what did Yahweh call Shaul?
Plague of death.
The plague of death. Muth. The message of uncircumcision is the method of death. It's the plague of death. And Yahweh called Shaul the plague of death. We'll return. We have Glenn on the line. We'll look forward to getting his insights and comments on this as well. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Glenn, I'm glad that you've called in. I expect that this has been a fairly compelling comparison between the chosen message of Paul, the messenger of uncircumcision, and the explanation from Yahweh as to what the message of the fruit of uncircumcision provides.
Yeah, certainly start. The reason I called in is as someone who's transferred from an enormous secular university to a smaller Christian school and got a Bachelor of Arts in Biblical Studies, one of my sites and stuff, and then went on a seminary, dropped out of there. I'm, pretty familiar with the dynamic of thinking and that sort of thing. And
yes.
Some people, like some students, are, just sort of company men or company people, if you will, just by whatever they're told. A good number of students have inquisitive minds and are comparing, contrasting, and detecting potential contradictions and questioning them and that sort of thing. And sometimes the answers that you get when you coming at DC, usually there's some sort of the overall dynamic in Christianity is sort of to maintain these contradictions in some sort of Hegelian dialectical tension, or say, qualify this. Well, no, it doesn't really mean this. It means that. And there isn't really, it definitely looks like a contradiction. It really isn't a contradiction. And Paul isn't referring to, Paul isn't referring to Shimon Kephesh and, the apostles of Jerusalem.
So when he names Kephesh and he says, "I condemned him," we just it's not really to Shimon Kephesh. We're just going to look the other way. That one's not answerable. So let's just look the other way.
That's a different incident than
statement on the upright pole. My God, why have you forsaken me? And the concept of in Christianity where the God dies for your sins, and yet he's very much alive, and God's no longer there. And they're not going to spend much time on that one, because if you think about that one, you can't be a Christian anymore.
Well, they're going to make a distinction again. Yeah, there's just no time to address. So they're going to make a distinction between the death of the physical body and, soulish death and all that sort of thing. What I was thinking about is, and even as a Christian, by the time you go to Bible school, something like that, you're already accepting, the canon of the Bible, like the New Testament Bible, the old Catholic Bible, of course, has the apocryphal book.
Yeah, you can't even fathom that it's internally contradictory, and that half of it, that there isn't really a New Testament, and that the author of half of that New Testament was a bogus rogue.
Like in the early years, the believers, the called out ones, the members of the way, The very first chronological book of the New Testament, chronologically, that circulated was the general epistle of Jacob, right? That was the first epistle to circulate among, you know, the various congregations. So,
yeah.
So they didn't have, so it was just a letter. In other words, they didn't ascribe anything such as plenary verbal inspiration or inerrancy to it. This was a letter from a guy who was authoritative.
Yeah. I think that Matanya's letter in, or Matanya's eyewitness account written in Hebrew was treasured and circulated.
That was the first of the Gospels, but not first of the books. Like the first,
right.
The first
mm-hmm.
one. Yeah. Actually, John Mark, the Gospel of Mark, I think was first, but it was.
Yeah, we really don't know that. And Mark was really writing for Shimon, but okay.
Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is about this notion of plenary verbal inspiration, canonicity, all that sort of thing. And even in a Christian context, you could easily relinquish ideas such as the inspiration of the New Testament or, you know, the canonicity without losing anything. You wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't lose Yosha as the Messiah, as the Passover Lamb, if you were to give up this notion of the... of the inspiration of the New Testament. And yet I was broaching this topic with a Christian friend the other day, and he was like very ruffled, very bristled, and very upset by this notion. Just in other words, there, even in Christianity, there's no requirement that says you have to believe in the canon in order to be saved, you know? And yet they're believing in that.
It's a disjointed religion based upon things that have been bastardized and twisted and taken out of context. And so taking the canon out of context and saying it's not true doesn't change a belief system.
Exactly.